Welcome to Dream Big with Jill Jack, a show that will inspire, educate, and encourage you to break down your barriers and follow your heart. Here's your host, Jill Jack, on Empower Radio.
Hello, my Dream Big listeners. I hope we're all surviving today. Are you out of bed? Even if you're not, that's okay. Sometimes it's okay just to stay in bed. Sometimes I do a lot of work from bed just because it feels like a gift to myself. You know, and I know we do a lot about self-care on here, but by golly, we need to, because it can be a crazy world out there. And sometimes you get to a point where you don't even know you're already so tense or stressed. Or, you know, what's a good clue for me? My daughter wanted to start going back to church. So we go to Kensington Church here in Troy. And literally, I was in a great mood and I'm like, oh, life is great. You know, I mean, I'm going through some things, family stuff, but then I get to church and the guitar player started picking his guitar, and I started sobbing. And I was like, okay, apparently I'm not okay, or obviously in touch with my feelings enough. But it was like it opened me up. And all of a sudden, I'm like, wow, Jill, how much have you shoved down this week that you weren't even aware of? And it was the holidays and things like that. And, you know, that's always, it's a yin and a yang for me with holidays. You celebrate what you have, but you also have a little bit of melancholy, mourning of what you don't have anymore. And so today I thought it was just perfect that this guest that I have today, literally, I want to say, I know it's going to sound really drastic, but she saved me in a lot of ways that she probably doesn't even know. Some of you may remember when I had whooping cough, and I mean, who gets that these days? But apparently I did. And I've had a lot of respiratory problems in my life, which probably, kind of a couple doctors have told me it was from singing in the bars for 15 years, secondhand smoke. And, you know, he said that, one of them said that, think about it, you know, normal people just kind of inhale normally at a bar. Well, when I sing, I suck in that much more air to sing it out. So I think I am, you know, a little bit suffering from some of that. But it was kind of strange how we bumped into each other. My neighbor, I was telling her I wanted to really take care of myself in a different way. I didn't want to do antibiotics. I wanted preventative. I wanted somebody to show me how to prevent this from happening instead of knocking on my doctor's door when I was, you know, crawling into his office with this horrific respiratory infection and him just slapping drugs on me. And don't get me wrong, he took care of me that way, but nobody could tell me how to prevent it or at least try to prevent it. So in walks Rachel Redmond, who happens to be my neighbor's friend. And it just all worked out. We had a wonderful conversation, a consultation. And there were so many questions that she asked me that I never really thought of. So I am going to bring this up and then I'm going to let her talk. But one of them was, what do you do for lunch? And I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, what do you do for lunch? And I said, well, usually I'm sitting at my computer and I'm eating whatever I eat and I shove it down. And before I know it, I don't even know what I had for lunch. And it's about a 10-minute deal, you know, just shove it in. Well, she had me start doing this thing where it was in the summer to take my lunch outside and not have my phone or my computer or my to-do list and just sit. Do you know how hard that is? That is so hard. Hello, Rachel. Say hello.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming in. But that was so hard for me, which just showed me, I mean, and that's just one iota of my life. So could you imagine if you walked around with me the rest of the time, you'd be like, oh my God, Jill. So tell us a little bit of how you, well, not a little bit. Tell me how you got into the practice and what you do and, you know, just let my listeners know who you are.
Sure. I'd love to. So let's see. So I've studied Ayurvedic medicine for over 15 years now.
Wow.
And I got into it when I was about 18 years old, and I had chronic digestive issues like my whole childhood. And I had a dairy intolerance and, I went to college and it just started getting worse and worse. And I went to the Western doctor, got some medicine, and it helped me for a while. But I asked him, how long should I take it for? And he said, you can take it the rest of your life. And I was like, I think I was 19 at that point. And I was like, I'm pretty healthy. I'd really like to know what was going on. There must be some cause for why I've been feeling this way. And my mom introduced me to her friend who, long story, but I found an Ayurvedic doctor. I had no idea what Ayurveda was, but he was helping my brother, and it was like I was just interested and I would try anything. So I started learning about Ayurveda and applying it to my life. And one of the main things I did was I learned to meditate. Mm-hmm. And I started meditating every day, 20 minutes, twice a day. And within 3 months, my whole world changed. My digestive issues were 80% reduced. I no longer had a dairy intolerance. And I understood that I was also suffering from chronic anxiety. Mm-hmm. So this anxiety was actually in stress, and not having the coping skills to deal with it was really what was causing my stomach aches in the first place.
Oh my gosh. And you were 19. I mean, how wise is it? I went through that. I always had stomach issues. I had ulcers and things like that in my 20s and stuff like that. And yeah, they put me on medication and all that. And I will tell you, I'm on my third day of no yoga and no meditation. I got to tell you, I'm a little bonkers today.
Yeah.
You know, you don't realize that the quiet, just investing in that peace, it's so rewarding. And it's like, why don't we do it? What do you find with most of your patients? What, I don't know what you call them, patients, clients. What is the biggest struggle? Is it that? Is it giving themselves the time? Or what do you think?
I think there's so much that goes into that. But I think I think a lot of us, we value what we can see and what we can feel and what we can touch, mm-hmm. which a lot of that can be work or external success. And it can be harder to value the intangible things or those moments of peace and quiet and stillness because they're hard to grasp onto. And I think we really live in a culture that prioritizes doing and action and activity and being productive over, you know, being still and quiet and contemplative. And while both things are good and necessary, we've kind of devalued those quiet moments. And those are the moments that really feed us and give us the energy to do all the action in our lives.
Right. And we were, before we got on air, we were talking to our producer, Remy, and I was shocked to hear that Remy doesn't have problems sleeping. I mean, I thought everybody had problems sleeping. He said he had one night where he couldn't sleep. I'm like, what? I mean, like, I'm always not sleeping. And the last week, you know, there's some stressors in my life right now, and I've been doing a lot more meditating. But last week, I woke up from like midnight to 5, 2 days in a row. And I'm like, I could lay here and stress, or I could go and do meditation and reading. And it was so lovely. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is okay. And even though, you know, I went back to bed for a little while and got up, but my day was great.
Wow.
And so the power of it, I think people, and I think older people too, you know, they were taught, I don't know if it's just older people, but we live in a society to work through it, mm-hmm. buck up, you know, get through your stress. And stress is such a killer.
Right.
So you're saying that with that stress as a younger child or 19, whatever, physical ailments happen.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. It was that mind-body connection that I really started to understand at that mm-hmm. time.
And so you decided to go into practice yourself. So what, you 15 years ago?
So at that time I was in college. I was a freshman when I began my journey, and I ended up being an English major because I didn't know what else to do and it seemed cool. And then I thought I would go to med school, actually. And I ended up doing my pre-med prerequisites. And I thought I would do, then I thought maybe I'll do PA school. I couldn't decide. Mm-hmm. But Ayurveda was always there in the background. And Ayurveda, for those who don't know, is a traditional medicine from India. And it's thousands of years old. And it's a really holistic mind-body spirit medicine. And Ayurveda was always there for me. But I just didn't realize I could do it as a career. And but I wasn't satisfied with I kept trying to do Western medicine, but it turns out I'm like really squeamish. And I worked in a hospital for a while And I was like, oh, I just can't do this. Like, I don't want to do it. And I finally decided, like, I love Ayurveda. Why don't I just go and check it out and study? And it's like, it was a 2-year program. It was a short commitment. It wasn't that expensive at that time. So I ended up moving to Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh,
which
my God. I always wanted
like,
to go there.
Oh, my God. It's beautiful. Well, especially Santa Fe was where I ended up living after that.
Mm.
But I, Albuquerque seemed like only Bugs Bunny went. Like, that's what I knew of Albuquerque. Like, turn left at Albuquerque. But when I went there, I fell in love with the land, with the people, with the environment, and with Ayurveda as well. And I studied there for 2 years with my teacher, Dr. Vasant Lad. And I went to India with him and other students for a few months and continued my practice. And that's really where I got started.
I think more and more society is embracing it. But, you know, I grew up, my dad was a doctor, my mom was a nurse. So even if I went to a chiropractor, I had to lie. Like, you know, and they just, the fear of the unknown, like, you know, if you say you go to a, you know, an MD, everyone's like, oh, okay, good. So you're going to be okay. But if you say that you're getting holistic, oh, you're mm-hmm. doing that.
Right.
You know, it's like, do you feel that there's growth and a little more understanding? Do you feel like we're getting towards that?
I do. I think it's changed a lot in the past, you know, decade and a half that I got my start. I mean, back then you couldn't find Ayurveda anywhere. I would look in yoga magazines and I would never see it. But now Ayurveda is all over the place.
Yeah.
And I do think there's a certain level of acceptance more and of understanding that our lifestyle and our food choices and our sleep habits really impact our lives. And there's a lot that we can do on our own to take responsibility for our own health. But also for a lot of people, it's a last resort. People have been through the system.
That'd be me.
They yeah. are frustrated and they come because they say, I have nothing to lose. And, you know, if this helps, whatever. People will tell me, I don't believe in it, but, you know, I'm desperate. So
wow.
And it's not a type of medicine that you have to believe in. It just, when you start to learn about Ayurveda, it just starts to make sense. It's almost like describing reality in a way that really is just common sense, but we've lost it. And a lot of it has to do with our connection to nature, our connection to the elements, circadian rhythms, and understanding that each person is unique and we all have these different mind-body constitutions or temperaments. And it's about understanding your own and how to make choices that are going to be supportive to each person as an individual. So there's no like everybody should do X, Y, and Z. Everybody should eat this and, you know, take this herb. And there's no one size fits all.
Right. And I think that's what helped with the consult that I had with you is that you asked me all sorts of questions that I was like, why is she asking me this? But it really, I mean, even if I just made minimal changes, I felt the difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's times where I'm like, oh, because we had talked about me not doing dairy for a while. And I'm like, oh, but I love dairy. And you're like, well, you can do it. I mean, you didn't tell me I couldn't do it. You just said, if you want to feel this way, you might want to try this or different things. And I like that we just have the options. But it's, again, like it cracks me up that what's good for us, we resist.
Mm-hmm.
It just drives me crazy.
It's so true, though.
You know, and it's like, I think it's going to take forever of a lifetime for me to just commit to what's good for me instead of, you know, going back to old habits of, you know, constant go, go, go without, you know, but I do adore when I meditate. I love when I meditate. I love when I do yoga. I know that once I'm done, I'm going to feel like a brand new person. So, you know, you, if it's okay, we can talk about it. You went through a severely stressful time in your life. Did you use your practice to get you through this? I mean, and if you could talk about that.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So I definitely used all of my tools of Ayurveda and also Chinese medicine, which I went on to study after, and meditation and yoga and everything. But so, yeah, when I was So I moved to Michigan from Santa Fe in 2016 with my husband, and I was pregnant at the time. Mm-hmm. And we were leaving this wonderful life in Santa Fe for our next chapter, which was a new career for my husband. I was going to start my own practice, and we were going to start our family. So it was a very exciting time in our life. And when I was, it was, you know, our pregnancy was planned and I was so excited. And when I was 19 weeks pregnant, I went in for my routine anatomy scan, which all women really go through to monitor the baby and the growth and everything. And it was discovered that my my baby had multiple severe fetal anomalies, specifically in the brain. And it was a very, very poor prognosis. And at that point, the doctors presented us with options. They said, you know, you can continue this pregnancy or you can choose to terminate it, given, you know, what you know. And I mean, that was just a horrible, horrible moment in my life when all of my hopes and dreams for becoming a mother and this child I was carrying just really shattered right, you know, before my eyes. And I ended up choosing to end my pregnancy, and it was quite a horrific choice to be faced with. But I chose with a lot of peace in my heart. I have a strong spiritual practice, and it was in my practice that the answer came to me that, you know, I couldn't bring this child into the world this way. And that was specific to me and my own body and my own baby, really.
Right.
And I mean, a lot of women might be faced with this and choose something different. And, you know, I have love and compassion for everybody, but I had to do what felt right in my own heart, which was to let my baby go. And in that moment, that was actually when I realized I was a mother, because I had to choose something on behalf of my own child that felt really painful for me to do, but I knew the letting go was my greatest act of love and compassion for my unborn child.
It is a beautifully painful story, but it has so much message in it. And it's so important for people to understand. You know, I had a miscarriage. I was 3 months pregnant when I found out that the baby never really evolved. Mm-hmm. And kind of, I think the placenta went back into the womb. I don't exactly know everything that went on, but just that feeling of shock. And I think, you know, even with miscarriage alone, which is nothing compared to what you went through, you know, we live in a society where it's like hush, hush, mm-hmm. hush. And there's so much that goes into it that people don't understand, like not just emotionally, but physically what your body goes mm-hmm. through. And, you know, I still felt pregnant after I found out, you know, that I had lost the baby. And people are just like, well, just get on with your life. You know, there's not that knowledge of, or empathy even. It's like ignorance mm-hmm. to not know what to say, and also opinionated things that are just horrific because you are not thinking of yourself.
Right.
Truly, you were thinking of, which, by the way, parenting 101, the hardest thing of parenting is to take yourself out of the picture, really.
Right.
And, you know, this unconditional love you've already experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, as horrific as the, you know, the outcome was, there was a beauty in it in the sense that you even understood what parenting was before the baby came to life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of those things that, you know, in the deepest moments of suffering, if I could be present with it, like beauty would come in.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think we don't know how to go around and talking about these things. And it was an incredible burden for me to carry to have my pregnancy and my own identity as a mother be totally invisible to people. And I figured out that one of the ways to start to heal myself and to, you know, help my heart along the way was to start telling my story and to make my own, you know, make myself visible as a mother and to let people know that I loved my baby and I honor my baby and his life mattered. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's a lot of controversy around the abortion mm-hmm. and And it was so painful for me. My own abortion was right in September of 2016, so right before the election.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, the debates are happening. It's on the radio. I'm being called a murderer, you know, like these just horrific things. And I was like, my baby mattered. And he, you know, and his life had meaning. And I wanted other people to know that, I think, because it was totally invisible.
Well, on top of it, your strength is incredible, by the way, because some people, and me included, I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I could have. I think because on top of it, the emotional pain that you're going through, and, you know, you don't want to say, oh, everything happens for a reason kind of thing. I kind of get sick of that statement after a while. I use it a lot to get myself through things. But the fact that let's kind of flip the coin on that. Yeah, everything does happen. It's what you do with it, mm-hmm. what happens to you, and then the growth from it. And I think that your practice alone shows us how to grow mm-hmm. individually and how we're all different. And now this on top of it is just such a great example of what you do for yourself, what's right for you, not what society says, not what the pressure of your loved ones, because everyone's got their opinion,
right.
You know, and I think it's an incredible message. And that's why I wanted you on the show, because each one of us, all you listeners out there, we each have our own life. We have our own life to live. And while we think and we're so concerned about what other people feel and think about us, they're really thinking about themselves more than, you know, than us. But if we're not happy within, what would we be to other people? And so you took this and you decided to share it. You're not the first person, I'm sure, to go through this. And you must have touched amazing lives with it. And I think that's so important. And I commend you for it.
Oh, thank you.
It's fantastic. So what were some of the practices you used during this time for yourself?
It helps that I had a foundation of all these self-care tools and coping mechanisms, and I had practiced them for years before this happened, because once, you know, a devastating life event happens, it can be really hard to do self-care.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I had a many year practice of meditation, it was really hard for me to sit down and meditate and just be in that complete stillness. So I found that writing became one of my best outlet for,
I love
for
journaling.
Coping.
My favorite.
Yeah. And it's actually funny, because when I was about 10 or 11 years old and I couldn't sleep at night, I had all these thoughts in my head. My mom handed me a notebook and she said, write it down. And it was from that moment that I realized that when I could get the things out of my head onto paper, like we were talking about before,
my whiteboard.
Yeah. That something transformed. It was this process of transformation that really helped me. And so I had been journaling on and off my whole, you know, since I was 10, but it became my spiritual practice and it became my daily practice, really. And I would write for hours. I mean, this was a kind of a interesting time in my life too, because we had just moved. So we had just bought our home. I was about to start my practice, but I was in such, you know, grief and devastation that I couldn't start my practice. I couldn't really work in those first few months. So everyone else around me is busy, including my husband, who just started a brand new job. And I had so much time on my hands. And it was painful to figure out what to do with all of that time. And so writing, I just would lose myself in writing. And that helped me so much.
It does. And I tell all my Dream Big clients, journal. And they're like, eh, eh, eh. I'm like, no, you learn so much. I've been journaling since I was 11 myself. And I love looking back. Even I go back, like I do these games with myself. Like I go back a year and see where I was and see what I'm talking about. And if I haven't accomplished some of the things I was talking about, I'm like, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's just great problem solving. And on top of it, once you alleviate that from your heart and your soul and trauma, I think, which is what you went through. And I, you know, I've been through some trauma, and if you don't get it out, it festers,
right?
Which goes back to your practice. Mm-hmm. So get those things out, people. Yeah. I mean, it's so important to really go within. And I think we busy ourselves. We buy things to make ourselves feel better. We eat what we shouldn't to think comfort's going to make, you know, comfort food and all that. And I know we hear this all the time, you guys. I know I do too, but I'm here to say that Rachel helped me so much, and I have not been sick. I had one little cold that did not go into my chest.
Great.
Because of you, sister. So I'm going to continue to do that all through the winter. And so can you tell people where they can find your information and, you know, what they can do as far as if they want a consultation?
Sure. So you can visit my website. It's www.racheleredmond.com. And let's see, you can find me on Instagram. I'm there sometimes. It's at rachel.e.redmond. And my practice is in Lansing, Michigan. That's where I live. But I do a lot of online consultations, as well as I started teaching online programs.
Okay.
And really helping people have the tools and the foundation to, you know, do things like eat lunch.
like eat lunch with a tree.
Like do the things that will give them the foundation they need to, you know, be healthy, prevent disease, but then also get through the trials and tribulations that every life brings.
Because we're going to have them.
We're going to have them. So we, you know, it helps to be prepared.
And we have to wrap it up, but let's talk about your beautiful son.
Yes. So I did conceive and get pregnant again, and I had a healthy son almost a year to the day of my first due date, and his name is Ezra, and he's almost two.
He's amazing.
And he's amazing. Yeah.
He is a beautiful, beautiful soul.
Yes.
And I'm so glad he's here, and I'm so glad you came to see us today.
Thank you
so much for sharing your story. Continue to share it. Again, check out Rachel's website and everything else she said. It really works, and it'll be good going into the holiday seasons, people. Take care of yourself, because you can't take care of anyone else until you do. All right. Love you all. Keep dreaming big.